welcome back to episode 5 of The Therapy Show with me, Scott Johnson, and Wendy Dunford.
Hello.
Hello. What's going on?
Not a lot. Is this how we start?
Yeah, it doesn't. We're super lax about how we start. There's no fancy intros. We just get right to the meat of the subject. And as people know, the show is about stuff that, you know, people deal with every day. We've talked about bullies. We've talked about addictive behavior and some other things. Today, we're going to dive a little deeper into the whole concept of addiction. What is an addiction? What isn't an addiction? What could be an addiction? Why addicted people tend to keep returning to the thing they know is worst for them, even though they know it. Stuff like that. Chemical, emotional, whatever, wherever this takes us is fine. But I thought we'd start with one or an idea we got from an email. All right? Because a lot of people say this. They say, oh, I'm addicted to Breaking Bad. I can't stop watching Breaking Bad. I'm so addicted to that show.
Right.
Well, it's probably that's probably not the word, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's a word to use, but it's probably not the most accurate way to describe why you're into something like a television show or music or something else. Right. So this email we got from an anonymous person says, my wife tells me I have an addiction problem. What she means is nothing like drugs or alcohol, but an addiction to latch onto a particular subject or thing and then obsess about it for a time until that thing is gone or until the next round comes along. Example that she has brought up in the past would have been World of Warcraft, which I never paid for, but a friend paid for my subscription so I could socialize with him. I love Doctor Who, and I have watched all the episodes. I can on Netflix and want to be a cosplayer of the Tom Baker Doctor at my next con. I learned how to knit using a loom and have started knitting a scarf for my daughter first before starting my own. However, that has only gotten about 2 feet done, and now I don't seem to have much time for it. My current addiction, according to my wife, is that I want to build a full Mandalorian armor set from scratch. You know what this is? Do you know what this is? Mandalorians are like Boba Fett. That's what he's right. From that planet, aka race, whatever, in Star Wars.
Okay.
I have an acquaintance that is that is part of an international costume club who not only built their own armor but also do charity work like visiting hospitals for sick kids, toy drives at Christmas, and other things that I think would be great to do as well. Knowing him and looking at his pictures on Facebook got me to thinking about it. I met more and more members of the Utah chapter. It's a local.
A local.
At the recent Salt Lake City Comic Con, and they explained about making the armor and about the social aspect of the organization and the charity work they do. I am now interested in just how easy it is to build some armor for less than $300. It is a very social organization. I've taken the time to find more people in the club through Facebook, and I communicate with them via my phone or Facebook, Twitter, etc. Since Comic-Con, I have thought about doing some other cosplays as well, but the Mandalorian takes priority. He then goes on to say in a much longer bunch of paragraphs, his wife sees this stuff as obsessive and addictive. Okay. So he'll get this idea in his head, ooh, I want to make that armor, so now I'm going to just go for it. Is that addictive, or is that just you're into something?
Right. Well, and I mean, I think she's only complaining because it changes a lot.
Yeah.
And he probably doesn't follow through and finish a lot.
Right.
So that's hilariously, we're talking about, let's find an email about addiction. And I'm thinking, wow, this is a totally different direction, which is probably some ADD, which has some hyper-focus elements. People always think with attention deficit disorder, you're just scattered and jumping around.
That's what I assumed.
And there is a component of, you know, most people have, it's actually part of the diagnostic criteria, is hyper-focusing. Mm. So you hyper-focus, but the ADD other side of that, which is distraction and, you know, over-sensory, like something shiny over there. And, you know, so you leave a project after you've been hyper-focused on it. There's not a lot of ability to switch from task to task or also finish completion. So he really sounds like he has ADD. and she's calling it addiction. And, you know, you and I were talking before we started recording about how, you know, that word gets thrown around so much.
Yeah, it gets used in every conversation.
So we're going to define it well today and talk a little more about, you know, the addictions that are actually addictions. But in this case, it sounds like he's got this more of an obsessive personality. Mm. Rather than addictive, because by nature, addiction has to harm your life. So making this, you know, he's cost conscious. He's like, it's only $300. So he's not, you know, he's not going bankrupt with all of his stuff. He, in fact, he's so cheap he had a friend pay for his World of Warcraft thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's probably not, it's not ruining his life. It might be irritating his wife, which could ruin their marriage, sure. But it's by definition, your to have an addiction, it ultimately has to put everything in jeopardy, that you sort of your well-being, your relationships.
So that's part of the definition of addiction. Yeah. That's interesting because I never heard that before.
Yeah. Now, because everything else can be just addictive, you know, like Breaking Bad is addictive.
Sure.
But there comes a point where most people can turn it off, even if they binge watch for 24 hours.
Yeah.
And then they may not go back to it for a while and do some other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Addictive is you start to obsess about Breaking Bad, you can't stop. There's no more shows. The show is actually ended, but you can't move on. I mean, that would be a different thing.
You've watched it four times over because there's nothing left.
Yeah. And you're, you know, shaking when it goes off.
You're starting to see things.
There's different stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, people can be addicted to TV and, you know, sort of ruin their life by never leaving a screen. Sure. Uh-huh. So we'll talk more about that specifically, but let's just finish with this guy. So,
what's the difference between compulsive and addictive, real quick, though?
Okay.
Like if it's compulsive for somebody to do, I don't know, keep smoking,
right?
Even though they know it's killing them, or the cancer they have, which is now in remission, was caused by the smoking, yet they're still smoking,
right?
And they can't stop. Is that compulsive? Is that addictive? I don't know which.
So
that
when we talked in a previous show, we were talking about how sort of the brain chemistry of all this works. So you have dopamine that rushes through your body and your brain when you do something you enjoy, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So he sees knitting, which I love that. He's gonna like, I'm getting a loom and I'm gonna make me a scarf for my daughter.
Yeah.
And he's getting dopamine hits initially because it's fun and it's new, that novelty thing. Like, this is awesome. And then the reality to finish a scarf means you gotta come back and knit even when there's no dopamine. And what we end up doing is we flood our brains with dopamine, and we know certain things create more of a flood. Nicotine is a huge, it's a 225% increase of dopamine when you smoke.
Wow.
Which is a ton. Eating good food is a 50% increase, like your favorite food. So we all know that feels great.
Right.
Now imagine quadrupling that. That's a puff on a cigarette.
Right.
So the compelling part, let's define that. So the compulsion is this, you're just compelled to do something. Dopamine at some point has made a note in your brain, like, do that again. That was awesome.
Hmm.
And, you know, you do it and it feels great. And then suddenly that rush of dopamine, it just doesn't do the same. We adjust, or we create what's called tolerance.
All right.
So the knitting thing, he's knitting. This is awesome. 2 days later, I should probably knit, but now it feels like work. Hmm. Or it feels like something else, or like it's not as exciting. So like the dog in Up. Yeah. He sees a squirrel. He's like, well, that's shiny. That looks more fun. He wants another dopamine hit. So yes, at its core, there's a brain addictive element to this. However, you have to have a couple other things for it to be considered an addiction. So compelled, meaning I can't stop thinking about it. So there's obsessive.
Yeah.
Compulsive disorder, right? Let's just break down what that is. That's another show. But the obsessive part is you're thinking about something over and over and over and over. And the way to get your brain to stop doing that is to do the compulsion, which is whatever the act is.
All right.
So take the old germ, wash your hands business.
Germaphobe guy washes his hands 12 to 30 times a day.
Yeah. You're obsessively thinking about germs. They're, and you know, you've seen like something super gross and your skin crawls.
Yeah.
Imagine if you felt that way all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be awful. So you're obsessively thinking about these germs. And then you wash your hands and you get relief. In fact, you get dopamine again. But you get all this relief from doing the compulsion so that the thoughts stop. So it feels really great. But guess what you just trained your brain to do?
Yeah.
Obsess again.
Right.
So the treatment for that's a kind of a different story. But take this guy, knitting or something new, you know, I want to say the DeLorean, and that's not the word.
No, that is not the word, because that's a car.
He's building a DeLorean now. He's like, oh, sweet, that's a great
Mandalorian
idea.
Mandalorian armor, Mandalorian.
All right, so all of that, you know, each new thing. He also did something interesting. He completely justified it. Like, look how social this is, and I get to tweet with these guys.
A lot of that. Yeah.
Like, he's talking to his wife through this email. Like, honey, see, it's good for me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I get out of the basement, and you can't complain because look at the friends I have or whatever.
Sure.
Clearly, that's some old stuff.
It's got some charity.
Jimmy. Whatever. Yeah, oh, yeah, totally the charity. Yeah. So often, you know, we're sort of rationalizing our behavior. Like everybody binge watches 24 in like, you know, week for a week at a time or whatever. We sort of can justify our behavior. He's doing that same thing, which is kind of pre-addictive conversation. So she's not wrong in that she's sensing these qualities, but addiction with a big A, he's not there.
He's not that guy.
No, he's not that guy.
Because that guy would be, I don't know, I'm trying to think, a behavioral addiction type things. I'm trying to think how that manifests itself. Because it's easy to say what a heroin addiction does. Because you can see the pattern and you see exactly what it is. It's just constantly jonesing for your next hit, needing more and more of it, and doing whatever it takes to get there and destroying your life in the process.
Right.
It's kind of a paint-by-the-numbers sort of descent into madness.
Right.
But when it comes to, like, you're making too much armor for Comic-Con... Like it doesn't feel the same to me.
It's obsessive.
Yeah.
And it can have an anxiety OCD component, which is I do this, I feel better, so I'll continue to do this.
And it can have detrimental effects on his marriage, but not necessarily because he's addicted, but because it's in contrast for whatever reason to what she expects or what he should be doing or whatever.
Which is again another episode. So maybe there's a little ADD, but also maybe there is a marital component here, which, you know, she's probably like, yes, please talk about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, anything he seems to get into potentially takes him away from responsibilities at home or interactions with her or the kids that, you know, she feels are valuable, and he's knitting and building armor. So it feels not very meaningful to her.
Right.
And then doesn't know how to talk about it. Which is why he's defending himself in that email. He's had a few conversations with her, obviously.
It's a rare couple, I think, that the guy can have his pursuits, whatever they are, golf, nerdy stuff like this, whatever.
Right.
And her have her pursuits. It's rare for those to ever align. And I think it's even more rare for them to have the empathy to understand what the other side's doing. So it would be hard for me to be in a relationship where I don't know the passion of the spouse is something like, I don't know. I can't think of anything good. Floral wallpaper. It's all she cares about. It's all she wants to do. It's all she wants to make, buy, put up, take down, replace, whatever. Wow. I would be just like, oh gosh, really? Again with the wallpaper, right?
Yeah.
And they, on the other hand, would be like, well, again with the podcasting and the stuff and the artwork, you can be drawing stuff all day. And like, I'll bet that's more the norm than the not.
Yeah.
You know, like the crazy idea that Kim even gets half of what I'm doing is a small miracle.
Right.
And not only gets it, but totally supports it and says, yep, do what we got to do, whatever, whatever. And then I in turn do that for her. And there's this nice little give and take. But I'm guessing that that's not always, in fact, most of the time, not the case.
No. And I also think, let's take you and Kim for a second. You're both middle children.
Yeah.
And you're both very creative.
Even though I felt older than the Korean one. But anyway.
Well, and you had one older.
Oh, yeah. You always forget about that. But he was really there.
You're legitimately the middle child. But I also am the youngest.
He was out by the time I was 9.
I know. But I'm the youngest, and I don't. Can this damn family make a decision without me? No.
Yeah, what is that about?
So I don't play the youngest role at all.
No.
No.
No. Where they usually hide and kind of
Or like, oh, you guys think I'm a baby. Instead, you guys think I'm the freaking president.
It's true.
Yeah, let's not get on this topic. We should have a whole session.
We should have a whole thing about family structure and why it panned out that way.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, but you know, but that's my thought about you two. Is you're sort of both very creative. Kim's kind of the black sheep, even though she is so not a black sheep. But in her family, kind of. And
in that family of sheep, I guess by relative comparison, she looked black.
She's the black sheep, yeah. Right. And I think there's a lot of, you're both creative, and then you give each other the space to be yourselves, right? And I think so often we marry somebody who feels really comfortable and great and everything jives. And then real life, like the honeymoon stuff sort of fades and the real stuff comes out and you're like, hey, I thought you really loved going hunting with me. And she's like, I just love being with you, but I hate hunting.
I didn't want you to feel bad.
You hate the opera, but you went with me. And, you know, so they tend to find that they're pretty divergent. And so there comes a balance over time with, I got my thing, you got your thing. How do we support each other in this? But there's a lot of stuff that takes a lot of time. Like I always feel like golf widows or hunting widows, you know, are grounds for divorce. No, I mean, it's just a lot. I mean, every Saturday, 6 hours and, you know, whatever.
Super expensive.
Yeah. So you just got to, there's a whole other discussion there, but that thing, that balance is hard to strike. So this emailer is probably pretty normal, yeah. But I would ask him if he's listening, cause he might not, who knows?
Right.
Flip it, because it sounds like, you know, he's on his things and she's sort of holding the fort down and chasing him around like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, what is her thing that you're not supporting or that she just doesn't do because she doesn't think she has time because she has to do all the crap you don't do because you're building armor.
Right. Whatever. And I get why Mandalorians are cool. I get why their armor is cool. And I get why, like, the 501st, whatever it's called, there's a big group of it's a national chapter thing that goes around to all these cons. And they do nothing but make fantastic Star Wars armor replica helmets, like stormtrooper, the entire suits costing thousands and thousands of dollars and thousands of man hours. I mean, it's really impressive stuff. And I've seen their booth and it's incredible. She probably doesn't understand why this fantasy element from a movie from his childhood matters so much, right? This minute, like, why does that have to be the thing you're totally focused on right now?
Right.
And why, and when will it be whatever in her mind she thinks he should be focused on?
Right.
I kind of feel like I know what he feels like, except I haven't had the component of other people not understanding it.
Right.
I mean, my biggest, at least in my immediate home life, people get it. Yeah. Kids get it. Everyone loves it. The things I do, they're into it. I admit when I'm around mom or siblings, or just the bigger family on both sides, I don't think anyone knows what the hell I'm doing.
Right.
And I have drawn a taste of it, just a piece of it.
Yeah.
So when they come, when they were like, try to ask questions, I just kind of go, ugh, I can't explain this anymore because nobody's going to get it. Right. It's like a neighbor going, now what is it you do? It's something on the internet with the, and I just want to go, oh my gosh, freaking strike me down now. But he may not have, so he's not even feeling it, but at least I have the thing at home. And he's not feeling that. He's feeling like an alien in his own house.
Yeah.
This isn't me trying to protect him necessarily. Because I think there's probably a whole bunch of on his side and her side here.
Right.
But for him to get to do what he wants, I feel like he is going to have to cave in just a little bit and not be so obsessed or something. Right. Or give back in some major way so that it puts the balance enough in the favor of the wife that she's going to back off some. We don't know near enough about these people. Sure. We don't know enough about their relationship, but it brings up these interesting questions. Now, the bigger question for me is when it comes to real, raw addiction, like the real business of addiction, I had an experience just, I don't know, a week ago where I ate a whole bunch of Doritos, and I am at a point in my life where Doritos are not good for me. I got certain sensitivities to MSG or something. I don't even know what, but all I know is they mess me up, certainly, especially in some quantity. Now, when I was a kid, I could eat 40 bags and no one cared. But now it's different.
Which might be what the source.
Could be the problem is my crappy diet leading up to this. But so I got a little overzealous and ate what I would probably call two normal adult servings of ranch, Cool Ranch Doritos in one sitting. Now, again, 3 years ago, no problem. Good deal. I'm good. But now, not so much. So that basically put me in a relative fetal position for a few hours that day. And it was kind of awful. And I was hurting real bad. And it passed and everything's fine. But that same day when I had just been through this trauma of it hurting and this awful thing and whatever, I'm walking through the kitchen. I see the bag of Doritos. And I am going, maybe I can just have a couple more. Now, I'm not addicted to Doritos because I haven't had them in a month before this.
As your substance.
No, but I think I got new insight into what that is or what that thing is when somebody tries to cold turkey off heroin or crack or whatever. Let's even do something closer to reality, which is, you know, people getting prescription pills and getting addicted to those or whatever. That's a real problem. Hillbilly heroin, they call it. Some do. Or guys on Justified, that TV show on FX, call it that.
Let's be honest, who calls it that?
I don't know who calls it that. But anyway, the idea that they know that this is detrimental to them, their family, their job, their financial status, like everything about them is falling apart because of these drugs.
Yeah.
And yet they got wind that there might be a pill in Aunt So-and-so's house from a surgery she had not long ago. And I just got to find that bottle. I just have to have that. I have to get that one thing. Right. I think I kind of got a taste of that with the Doritos, because I should have been, like, when I was a kid, I ate too many, this is so dumb. I ate too much Captain Crunch once.
Oh gosh.
Like way too much.
Were your gums all ripped up?
Yeah. And my tongue always. And everything. And it was raw. It was awful.
Yeah.
It's more a weapon than a cereal. But then I jumped on the tramp and goofed around a bunch and was like screwing around and ended up yakking like 4 pounds of the stuff.
Oh, gosh.
Just barf like crazy. I couldn't look at the stuff for like 10 years.
Yeah.
Couldn't go near it. But somehow something can make me, you know, physically ill or in pain or whatever today. And yet I still want a handful of those Doritos. Like right now they sound good.
Right.
So let's what is that?
Well, first of all, let's talk about all of the preparation that led up to the Dorito love.
Okay.
So you had all sorts of good experiences with it. The hardware, the software, all of it was written about Doritos.
Yeah.
Dopamine, mental note, do sure. that again the next time you can.
Flavory.
Yeah. Mm. It's all great. So
Mom made salads with them, for heaven's sakes.
I know. What were we doing?
What were we doing?
That was our favorite meal, too.
It really was.
So you had all the sort of the written neural networking around Doritos as a positive, you know, probably even great. I mean, think of happy memories. You could probably think of a fun family trip where we're eating Doritos.
Yeah, lots of them.
So you have this, and then do you remember the time I couldn't pronounce Doritos or Mom couldn't, and we laughed?
Dehotries.
Mm-hmm. And we just peed our pants.
Yeah,
we loved
it was hilarious.
So
we even have a great family anecdote about Doritos.
Like it is it's like a family member.
Uh-huh.
How weird.
It's the official chip of the Johnson family.
We're disgusting. Anyway, so that is, you have all that good stuff, right? One time Doritos making you hurt for 3 hours is not enough to undo the wiring that is around that is a positive thing.
Okay.
Now, Captain Crunch, you did not have that.
I still can't.
Right. So immediately, your ancient sense of survival is like, no, we'll not do that again, because it's the first or second time. You had nothing else going on with that thing, right?
Okay.
So anyone who drinks a lot the first time and, you know, maybe binge drinks and pukes their brains out.
Yeah.
They kind of can go either way.
Yeah. I know some who go completely never again. And they don't.
But even the next time, if their first time is a bad experience, either never go back or they'll go back and try a wine cooler, or they'll do some other way because the social desire to
just edge in
is strong. Right.
Yeah.
But you take someone who's had so many lovely memories around alcohol, it just sort of overshadows any of the negative ones because that code is sort of written, right?
Well, in a way that feels more healthy because then they know it's just a stumbling block and then they can be moderate and they're not going to have that problem again.
Right.
I mean, in some ways that seems positive. Like if I would have just eaten a moderate amount of Doritos that day, there's a very good chance everything would have been 100% hunky-dory. No big deal.
Right.
But I couldn't.
But you know what you also had?
I still can't.
You had a drug cue, which is anything that reminds you of your drug. And yours was the bag sitting in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So if that bag had been thrown away in the garbage, which was probably a good idea on somebody's part in the house, maybe yours.
I blame Kim.
Blame Kim. If she had just chucked the bag.
Yeah. It's not fair for everyone else to suffer because of me.
I know, you druggie.
Like Nick should be able to have
some Doritos.
His bag of Doritos his whole life and then have his own bout of oversensitive food.
Yeah, he should
whatever.
Not learn from you.
Yeah.
He should eat crappy for 40 years to get your disease. So anyway,
we just thought it was eating. There was no eating crappy. It was just eating. Like growing up when we did, there wasn't anybody telling me.
It was with a salad. It was fine.
Yeah, my mom put it in with lettuce.
Yeah.
What was that?
Taco salad, baby.
That's what she called it, but that's not what that was.
It was taco meat, cheese.
Taco seasoning, a little bit of lettuce.
And Catalina dressing.
And a bunch of Doritos.
Which is like red acid dressing.
Yes.
I know. It's amazing. We're alive.
What the
anyway, but so the drug cue, though, I mean, this is why people can't quit whatever their addictive, you know, choice is if major things aren't changing. So let's talk about change real quick, stages of change. This is sort of everyone loves this model, and I'm sure no new one will ever come out because it kind of covers the whole thing. So stages of change, you got 5 stages.
This is an actual
thing.
Okay.
Pre-contemplation is the first one, and that is the one of like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't drink too much.
Yeah.
I think crack snorted through a straw is awesome or whatever. Like you're not in any place where you think you even need to change or want to change. Okay. Then you have the contemplation stage, which is you start to consider like, you know, maybe this isn't going so well and I should probably think about changing.
Well, how is this different than like, say what's the other one? Seven stages of acceptance or whatever, when the first one's denial or what is it? Whatever it is.
Oh, like the grieving.
It sounds like this.
Yeah. But this is more like all the stuff. And this is why therapists like to talk about it, is because when somebody comes in and they're like, I'm good. And you're asking them questions and they're like, I did drive drunk here. And you're like, so anything you'd like to change in your life? And they're like, I just think my wife is too naggy. And you're like, okay, you're in pre-contemplation, which is you just don't even know that the things need to change, right?
Okay.
Then you're in the contemplation change stage, which is like, I got to change some things.
I feel like that's where I am right now with diet.
Yeah. And you're not fully committed. Mm-mm. Because you have these lovely memories of
Kim chips. Brought me salad today. I popped it open and my first thought was, ooh, there are croutons in here. And I know that croutons are kind of on the list of things I'm supposed to not. It's just super processed and crappy.
Yeah.
So it's not like those came out of somebody's French kitchen and were dried bread overnight and, you know, the fancy way of doing it. These are crappy factory made garbage croutons.
Right.
And yet there I was going, should I or shouldn't I? Is that really a problem? Like, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I hate making these things about me, but that's how this feels.
It is. So contemplation is like, I know I need to change. Yeah. You're sort of considering it. You're physically preparing to make a change.
Yeah.
Okay. Action is the next,
action.
Wait, did I say preparation? Oh, sorry. Preparation is the one where you are physically preparing to make a change. Okay. You're sort of like, this is possible. Okay, I'm going to do this. And you're prepping for it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the action is you take action, seek treatment, get into groups, stop using. It's all the behaviors that are necessary. So you would clean out your kitchen. You would not have food. Kim would not bring crap in. Everyone is on the diet with you, of course, right? So
yeah, that sucks.
All that's going on in the action stage.
Yeah.
And then maintenance is the hard part.
I got to write this down because maybe I need to get to those other stages. How often do people get looping and never get out of the contemplation stage?
Oh, contemplation's a very big market.
Is it?
A lot of people hanging out.
So if you're drinking too much, you spend a lot of time probably in that phase.
Yeah.
Because you're not to the, there are no dire bottom of the barrel moments yet.
Right.
But you're thinking about them coming.
Or like, yeah, I should just really save some money.
Yeah.
Or, you know, however you might think about it, addiction or not. I mean, this is how anyone changes anything, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to hang out with that friend anymore. They're kind of toxic. Before, you're like, I don't know why this friendship is.
Or my hot water heater, the water's too cold.
Totally.
Something's wrong. I need to, well, maybe I need to get around to,
so
to eventually.
So 6 months of contemplation and then it busts and you move into the action stage because you don't have any time for prep.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. We all do it. I
never thought of it that way.
We all do it.
It's about, that is the human condition.
It is. Moving from unconscious unawareness.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
That's funny.
To making changes and then maintaining them. Because maintaining is the hardest part, right? You can do all the things and then suddenly a drug cue comes along. So this is an important thing to think about.
Maintenance is the whole, like you see in movies, like I got to call my sponsor. I need to, I'm having a rough night. I need to talk to the group or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's eliminating your drug cues, right? So your Dorito drug cue, you just don't go down that aisle. You avoid those things. Now imagine if it's drinking and everyone in your life drinks and it's social and it has all these benefits that you have to now get rid of, right?
Right.
I mean, I think today there's so much more acceptance and respect for someone who says, I'm sober and I can't, you know, I don't, I'm, you know, I'm out. As I think there's a respect for that, but you're going to be the designated driver forever. So
yeah,
good luck with that.
That's true.
But you need to know yourself well enough to know what those cues are. So take a drug addict. Okay. They go through the stages of change. They do the action. They're getting in treatment. They're in rehab. Well, guess what happens in rehab? There are no drug cues. There are no alcohol cues because you're in a weird place you've never been.
Yeah.
You have no writing, you know, there's no written score for like, okay, you know where you get the alcohol is you blah, blah, blah. You are removed from all of that. Well, then you go back to your real life and guess what that's full of? Drug cues.
Yeah.
So then you got to manage those and that's pretty tricky. So
that's why people relapse.
Absolutely.
Not because the program wasn't good. It's just because they can't be in the program for the rest of their lives.
No.
Next stage is a hard one because you're on your own.
Right.
So that's where I struggle with these things.
Yeah.
If I'm around people, Like right now, doing this with you, I'm not once going to this during this process go, you know what, we're going to pause and then I'm going to go get some Doritos. It's not going to happen. What will happen is it will be
if you did.
Tuesday afternoon when no one's here, kids are at school, Kim's at some appointment, I'm on my own, I'm in the studio, I just did something long, hard, and arduous, and I'm going, I'm kind of hungry.
Right.
Then I go get tempted, then I eat it.
Right.
Like a dumbass.
It right.
That's the problem.
Right. And then you just talked about the next stage of the drug cycle, which is, you know, you beat yourself up. You feel extremely guilty for relapsing.
Yeah.
You know, and then you go back to like recommitted, not going to do it, Then we get back to pretending my life is normal. And then we're back into getting triggered, our drug cues.
That's the cycle.
And the face of people you've done drugs with is a drug cue. Their name, their number popping up on your phone. There's so
many
ways.
That's why I always tell you to get rid of all those friends, get rid of those names in your phone, that kind of stuff.
You have to eliminate all your drug cues. And they can be people, they can be places, they can be colors, they can be smells, they can be, I mean, your brain is amazing and irritating at the same time because it loves a 1400% increase in dopamine. It loves that.
Yeah.
And so that's meth, by the way. Do not do meth.
Meth's 400%.
1100%.
1100%.
Sex is 100%. Nicotine's 225. Cocaine's 400. Meth is 1100% increase.
What if you?
That's why those people don't sleep, eat, or do anything but like pick their faces, because the brain is like, there is nothing that brings joy after that. Nothing. You have hijacked that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that bad.
It's terrifying.
I wonder how Walter White's meth is, because that was real pure good stuff right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of Breaking Bad.
Yeah. So, okay. So eliminating your drug cues is pretty important. Let's define addiction real quick.
Yeah, please.
And then we'll talk about the cycle of it, because we're talking about it, but I think there's some good
let's
words.
Let's academia up this thing.
Let's academia it up. Okay. All so right. Addiction is defined as obsessive thinking.
Okay.
And a compulsive need for drugs, alcohol, food, sex, or anything, despite the resulting negative consequence.
Food is in there. Yep. Damn it.
Addiction includes the development of tolerance combined with withdrawal symptoms. Those things are pretty important.
Yeah.
So the last show, I think we talked about autoreceptors, that when the dopamine floods the brain, the receptors that absorb, sort of uptake the dopamine to regulate it like a normal person, has these autoreceptors on top of, like, up on the ridges. And if you flood it too much, will you flood up to the autoreceptor? And the whole system's like, too much. It's kind of like the bathtub, like when it hits that thing and it starts draining, turn off your dang water. But it has like this safety valve, right?
Yeah.
So that occurs. So what happens is it now down regulates the production of dopamine. So guess what? The next time you have Doritos, it doesn't feel as good. So now I need to eat 4 adult servings. Right? Okay. So
I love that that's all so physical.
Like
what
it
you
is.
Just described is not just some ethereal brain fart. It's like literally there's a thing, there's a structure to it.
Yeah.
It might be microscopic and even on the the atomic level, but it's happening.
Which
That's crazy.
PS was discovered 2 years ago.
PS.
PS, as in postscript.
Oh, postscript.
Was discovered 2 years
ago. Oh, you mean like PS, like end of statement. Yeah. PS, that was discovered a couple years ago.
Okay. Yeah, just 2 years ago, which, you know, the problem is we've moralized so long about addiction. We've moralized like you are weak, you are not a good person.
Yeah.
So your Dorito thing, none of us have a really strong, unless we're super left-wing foodies, that guy is evil because he eats Doritos. But most of us are like, oh yeah, I totally get that. Doritos are awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Or like, yeah, that's kind of gross. But we don't think you're a sub-moral human being.
No.
But if you can't quit
even
meth,
though I kind of have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I don't, listen, people, I don't really have a problem with it. But you know
yes,
what I
does.
Mean?
Yes,
I
he
still,
does.
I made an error, and as I did it, I knew I was making a mistake, yet I still did it.
Right.
That to me is a piece of this behavior, but you're right, because we have demonized things like it's still possible to be a drunk and get more sympathy than if you are, let's say, addicted to HTC or marijuana or something.
Right.
That guy's going to get more demonized. Why? Because traditionally, culturally, we have made that seem like low life drug use and it's illegal.
Right.
As of whatever, you know, whenever that happened. You know, I think it's funny. I think people think marijuana has always been legal since man has kept records, which is ridiculous. In the same way that everyone thinks in this country that Thanksgiving has been here forever. I didn't know it was FDR.
I know, right?
I didn't know that.
Or Mother's Day or Father's Day are just freaking pranks and make money.
We made them up, dude.
Oh, we make up everything.
I think
of one thing we haven't made up. It's called civilization, dude. You make stuff up.
I get it.
But hold on. Yeah. So take the drug thing for a second. Okay, Freakonomics did this, I thought was super interesting thought experiment. And they asked all these people and all these economists to think about this. If alcohol, everything's normal today. We have our iPhones. Yeah. We have our everything. Normal. Except alcohol and marijuana were discovered today together.
Okay.
Never heard of before. No one knew what those things were. They were discovered today. Which one would we pick as a society to have legal? And which would we say? Right. Based on, part of it is we don't have all the evidence of the dangers of pot. But we sure know the cost of alcohol.
Oh, no, we know.
And it's extreme.
Yeah.
But it is so ingrained in cultural that it would never occur.
Plus, you wouldn't smoke it. Plus, it wouldn't be a bunch of 60s hippies smoking it. Plus, it wouldn't be, you know, we wouldn't have all of this backstory.
Right.
We would just straight up say, this plant that grew out of the ground
is natural.
I mean, it would have taken off that way.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you it would be the other way around. I'm sure of it.
Right.
I'm 100% sure of it.
And... Anyway, so the moralizing that comes from all the everyone throwing their two bits in and religion and certain, you know, subsets of culture that sort of dominate blah blah. Yeah. All that's happening.
Yeah.
Here we are. Okay, so I'll go back to addiction. Okay, so the tolerance withdrawal. So the withdrawal symptoms. You could call your 3-hour stomachache withdrawal, but probably
you could kind of.
That's a direct consequence of a bad batch is what that is.
That is, you know what that is? That's when you've gotten so drunk you need to get sober. That's what that was.
Yeah, that was your wake-up call.
Getting it out of my liver. The equivalent of getting my alcohol out of my liver, I had to get it out of my guts. I had to take a dump, yeah.
And it burned. Okay, so you got to have the withdrawal part to get the addiction definition, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so in addition to tolerance... An addict or an alcoholic will experience intense physical cravings for the drug. And this is crucial here. And
when you say in addition to tolerance?
In addition
to tolerance and
withdrawal, right. They also need to have intense physical cravings. And this is, I think, really important. An emotional obsession to take in the substance regardless of the consequence.
Wow.
So you might be addicted to Doritos. Addiction develops over time and usually begins with misuse, moves to abuse, and results in addiction. So let me just talk about those three things real quick. Always starts with misuse, which is you're alleviating. Okay, first of all, you probably have experimenting, like, woo, that was fun. And then it leads to this emotional or physical pain that you use drugs or alcohol to alleviate.
Right.
So you're just trying it. And then it could be just social, and this is fun. But then you go back to, I'm in pain, so I'm going to use it for, you're medicating.
You're self-medicating,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of misuse. Then abuse is... You're increasing the use to try to maintain the same effects of euphoria and escape. If you don't up your ante, you're not going to get the benefits. That's when we get to abuse.
Keep going higher.
Yeah. And then if you keep doing that and you don't resolve it, then you're heading into problems. And you start to have the physical cravings and the emotional stuff starts combining and you get in trouble. So
it is possible, people, at any stage that you just mentioned to pull back, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like there's...
The
this requirement that all steps are completed and then finally you get better. It's right. That you could hit the stage of, whoa, I think I may be taking this because I'm trying to cover up something. I'm going to stop now. And some people do that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's
but
not
that's,
all
that kind of combines with our stages of change. If you're in pre-contemplation this whole time, you're not going to say, it's time for me to step out.
Right.
You're going to probably continue until something wakes you up, right?
Yeah.
Kind of that wake-up call. If you're in contemplation the whole time, you probably won't maybe even get to addiction levels because you'll intervene in between.
Well, okay, back to Doritos for 1 second. I know when I eat a batch of Doritos in that quantity that I'm ensuring an outcome that is very painful and unpleasant.
Yeah.
If I also had a similar problem with, let's say, I don't know, heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that if I take a hit of heroin, I'm going to have some very unpleasant withdrawal or some very unpleasant results. Or alcohol, even. Just if I drink all night, I'm going to have a horrible headache and I'm going to be sick all day and I can't go to work or whatever.
Yeah.
It's weird that in my head, it's easy for me to say, well, I would, of course, avoid that drinking. Or I would, of course, oh, you know what? Better, let's keep it in the food. Let's say I knew that this pile of food had salmonella poisoning in it. And this pile of food didn't.
Yeah.
But I know that either way, with or without the salmonella poisoning, that kind of food is going to give me real trouble.
Yeah.
No problem avoiding the salmonella pile, even though the results are identical.
Right. And the food's identical.
Yes. No change.
Yeah.
And no taste change. Like, you wouldn't even know.
Right.
But if I knew it had salmonella, no way.
Right.
Know that this gives me the same exact pain, awful cramps, everything else as salmonella poisoning in the exact same food. I still ate it.
Right.
What the hell is that? Because that's me knowing consequences.
Yeah. But you also have a whole lifetime of not having that consequence. You have right. had maybe once or twice with food poisoning that will forever change your willingness to eat something with salmonella.
Right.
So again, that hardwiring or the software is not done.
I can't eat Kentucky Fried Chicken because I got sick on that once.
Right.
And I can't eat
it's over.
Captain Crunch because I got sick on that once. And Kim can't eat string cheese because she craved it when she was pregnant. And then once she had the baby, she couldn't go near it.
I can't even tell you. I can't even tell you the word of the product that I can't eat.
Really?
Because it makes me. Okay, I'll say it. Ready?
Yeah.
Progresso. I literally gag even thinking about the color of that can.
Hold on. The red sauce stuff? Is that what that is? Spaghetti?
See, I'm gagging right now.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's soup.
Oh, the Progresso soup.
I'm dying. I can't even, let's stop talking about it. Anyway, right, yeah, no. But again, I barfed up an entire bucket of Red Vines, and that doesn't stop me.
From eating more Red Vines.
Yeah. Oh, cotton candy once too, which is not a bad thing to barf on a ride.
Actually, it's not bad.
A ride at Lagoon and sprayed an audience. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Anyone there? I will give you $100.
You sprayed an audience?
Yeah, I was in the umbrella thing and it spun and I just...
Oh, I'm now having a memory of this.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Anyway,
you were the peaker growing up.
I had plenty of lovely memories of cotton candy and Red Vines. Clearly, I have a sugar thing. Yeah. So it was fine, but don't you dare use the P word in my house because I will...
Okay. Hurl. This is good to know, but I'll never bring it up.
Because I'd never eaten it before. It made me super sick. And
is it just a soup?
I can't even look at the... There's a commercials. Have you seen these commercials?
Oh.
I have to close my eyes and run.
Really?
It's so bad, yeah. But again, that's because there is no... There's no pre-writing for it.
So you don't have any of the positive. You've got only the negative.
Only the negative. And it was sufficient, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if I didn't eat a bucket of Red Vines most weeks of my life, and then I threw, you know, and I just threw up Red Vines, I wouldn't probably touch Red Vines. Huh. It's just enough. So we go back. So when you're saying, I'm looking at these two plates of foods, I know there's another thing here, which is delayed response. So anyone in the contemplation stage can go to a bar with friends and say, you know, I think I'm drinking a little too much these days. So I'm not going to have much tonight.
Yeah.
And all their drug cues are there. All the fun is there. And by the way, if you've been around a bunch of drunk people and you usually are drunk with them and then suddenly you're not, you realize how lame it actually is.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's just not as fun, right? So suddenly you're now dealing with this loss. You're dealing with all the drug cues in your face. And
all
you're
your
gonna
friends are there.
Drink.
Right, right.
And then the outcome might be, I'm going to have a hangover tomorrow and I'm going to blah, blah, blah. But that 12 hours away is way too far. We're pretty terrible at, we're really good at rationalizing that 12 hours from now, I'll be just fine. When even though on some level we can just shove back that voice that says, no, no, this isn't good.
It's a weird justification. Like even last night we were at dinner with Kim's brother and I got a salad. I was being all good, right? He gets this big, huge nightmare of a beef thing and a bunch of fried potato skin things, deep fried. I'm supposed to avoid that stuff like the plague. Mm-hmm. And he brings it to him and I'm like, well, that's his food. So I don't have to touch that food. It's good. I'm not tempted at all.
Yeah.
Until he says, hey, you want any of these? And I said, oh, I really shouldn't. And then about 5 minutes later, like, okay, one. And I took one. And then a little while later, I took another one. Like, I'm finding justification while I'm sitting there because I want it so bad. Because
also, it's in your upper esophagus and stomach, not where it's getting to where you
not
get
where the
punished.
Trouble is.
Yeah.
Right. The trouble's later. And I figure, well, I'll be home then.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. Everything will be fine. Like, that sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks to think that way.
Yeah.
So what I need to do, how does one take out all the... So go back to a drinking person, someone who has trouble with drinking. There are plenty of people who socially drink and are very responsible and everything's fine their whole lives. Obviously.
Yeah.
Not everyone is an alcoholic.
Which really is the argument for delayed drinking.
Right.
Because your brain has more time to wire. The 21-year-old age limit, if anyone ever even obeyed that law...
Right.
Yeah. Would be a smart one.
It is actually smart. People think of that one. Again, that's another moral thing. It, for whatever reason, I don't know why it gets adopted as, oh, you're not 21 and therefore you're horrible or whatever. But the minute you're 21, it's okay. It's weird. But
well,
you're right.
It's a law.
So let your brain inform, let the, you know, like I wish in a weird way, what would my life be like if I'd eaten too many Doritos when I was five, yacked them all over the couch?
You wouldn't be eating Doritos.
I wouldn't care now.
No.
I wouldn't give two craps about it.
No, and maybe we've talked about this before, but you know, Dad sort of scared the crap out of me when he said, "I'm an alcoholic," and I'm like, "Oh, what does that mean?" Because you don't drink. He's like, "But if I did,"
yeah, he was sure of it.
Yeah, because he'd get buzzed on aspirin, and well, that
he used to be a bartender and never drank even then, right. And yet still said he was an alcoholic.
Right, and it's because he knew.
Yeah.
Maybe because he could take aspirin and get a buzz that he just kind of knew he was wired for it. So it scared the crap out of me. And I think about that too, though. I mean, my drug is sugar. Friends, high sugar. Okay, anyway, let me define addiction really quick.
All right, go
ahead. Because we went from misuse to abuse to addiction. So I just want to finish this.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good idea because we're getting close anyway. And I don't want to forget the most important part of addiction is to probably explain what the hell it
is. Define. Okay, so great time and effort is spent acquiring the alcohol or drugs. After the addict or alcoholic is completely entrenched in the cycle of addiction, the health, financial, social, and emotional consequences appear. That's when you start paying the price. Mm. The addict may just feel that they have been unlucky or blame the consequences on others instead of their addiction.
Yeah.
And then you have this lovely circular effect of that drugs and alcohol actually mess with how your brain works. So how those neurotransmitters function, the ones that help you feel good on a normal, lovely day, or that you know, you find joy in some simple things. You know, it sort of starts to mess with just your overall brain chemistry.
But what if your joy, what if your simple thing you find joy in is a couple of beers in the afternoon?
Well,
you know what I mean?
You're a raging alcoholic, then that's not simple joy. That would be gone too. Even if it was, you know, beer's no longer enough or whatever. You have to create that tolerance, that withdrawal, all that stuff to define it.
Well, because I don't have any joy eating Doritos anymore. Right. I just have regret.
And I just have craving.
I have craving, but I'm left with none of the other, like, oh, these are so good. I just want to lick all this stuff off of them first and then eat them. Or right. I want to crunch them up and put them in my tomato soup. Or all these, as a kid, these things I love to do. I mean, I realize people are going to hear this and go, what is it with them and Doritos? But it's just a good example. And now I don't have any of that. All I have is I look at that bag and go, ugh.
Right.
I want those, but except, I don't want those.
Right. It's heroin at this point for you.
Kind of.
Right. So let me...
And it's other foods too.
Let me talk about the cycle of addiction just a little bit because I mentioned that. You just got to know what it is. So frustration and internal pain that leads to anxiety and a demand for relief of these symptoms. And fantasizing about using alcohol or drugs or behaviors to relieve the uncomfortable symptoms. Obsessing about using those things, drugs, alcohol, or whatever, and obsessed about how your life will be after you use them. Like, it's going to be better. It must be better because right. You're sort of suffering.
Sure.
Engaging in the addictive activity to gain relief. We call that acting out. And then losing control over your behavior and then developing feelings of remorse, guilt, and shame, which lead to feelings of dissatisfaction. Making a promise or a resolve to oneself to stop the behavior and substance use. So after, and then you just start over. So after time, obviously the pain comes back and then it just keeps rotating. There are people that will binge use and so their cycle's much slower and they like, hold on, it's been 3 months and boom, and then they just indulge like crazy. Yeah. And then there's others who it can cycle multiple times a day.
Oh, per day?
Per day.
Ugh.
Yeah, so...
Well, though, see, again...
Which is why you got to detox. Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes people are like, okay, well, it's just a porn addiction, which we don't want to talk about.
Well, or people get all mad.
It's just a gambling thing I like, or it's just a video game I play constantly or whatever. You kind of rationalize it, but try going without it and see if this cycle actually is happening. So for that guy,
yeah, try going without his
armor. Try going without his armor deal. And he's probably fine because at some point he's going to burn out on the armor and find some other else. So it's not... His isn't specific to one kind of thing. I think his is more of a need for more dopamine. And so he finds new ways to get it. Whereas someone else's brain, they've wired it around drinking or they've wired it around a drug or something. And it just feels awesome. And then life is real life, right? Yeah. So they're just medicating that. And then there's people that this never happens to. And they're so lucky they don't have.
I hate those people. I mean, I don't, that's the funny thing is having had my own experience, which I've talked about on other shows with an inappropriately prescribed drug that I acquired a tolerance to and then dealt with all sorts of up and down crap with it. That was a case of I never touched it again. Yeah. I didn't want anything to do with it. The minute I hit tolerance and went, whoa, what is this? And then figured out what was going on. That was it. I was done.
Right.
So
if only you
unlike
had
the Dorito problem.
Right.
But again, see, here's an there's an example of where I didn't know. I didn't have a I didn't have a brain wired to know what the heck that was.
And that was the first time you'd use prescription ever. Meds for any for anything. Kind of thing.
Tylenol is the most I ever had in my life right. until this, you know, these headaches and this guy gave me this stuff and I didn't know what was going on.
And you also reached tolerance extremely quickly.
Oh, well, yeah.
So like guess what? Dad is right.
Or something. Dad was totally
alcoholics.
Right. Dad was right. We probably have some. See, that's the other thing. We should touch on this before we go on this episode. The idea that it is a gene or a genetic, can be a genetically based thing. Where,
right.
you know, a lot of people scoff at that and go, whatever, you drink or you don't. You know, anybody who's not addicted, of course, has lots of opinions about things they don't understand. But
yeah.
But how much of this is genetic / it's part of the, you know, it's a, you know, people that call alcoholism a disease. Some people just hate that. Right. They hate that you call it that.
Right.
Because it's not a disease. You didn't catch it from some hobo that bit you in the alleyway. It's a thing you have.
Right.
That is behaviorally based, and so therefore people think that's bullcrap. What is the
explanation? The we talked about this in another show too, but epigenetics, which is you have genes that are sort of wrapped all tightly around with some cool material, and you do certain things in your life, and it expresses that gene, right?
Yeah.
So I believe because I got high on Dramamine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a child's dose. Thank you. that if I had drank alcohol, it never appealed to me. It always smelled like barf, which I don't know what that's about, but maybe I smelled someone weird. Barf. I just think you're eating like pee, drinking pee and barf. Like that's what it smells like to me. Bless all of you for doing it, but please don't breathe on me. And so I probably have a gene that would be expressed if I had triggered it, had certain behaviors and experiences that might have triggered that. So
okay, so it isn't so much that like there's a gene that says
you don't have,
you have brown eyes and you're going to drink.
Yeah.
It's you have brown eyes. That's an obvious one.
And if you drink before a certain age and
then
an
this
amount,
other gene's going to kick in and go, yeah.
We're probably going to express ourselves, right? Yeah. And the only evidence I have of that is that I got high on Dramamine. And so any substance really works for me
too.
Pretty intensely, right?
I mean, yeah, and sometimes paradoxically for me, like the thing it's supposed to do, it does so well that it actually goes so far around the other side that it's worse.
Right.
Like that's how it is sometimes. Right. Like paying, like anytime anyone says, oh, we're going to, you know, possible surgery or whatever. And I just go, painkillers, dude. They don't, like when I had that thing on my neck and they did that surgery, they gave me Loratab.
Yeah.
I took half a Loratab and spent 3 days in what I felt like was hell mind. It wasn't soothing, pain relieving, anything. It was kind of like 40 different other things it's not supposed to do.
Right.
So I feel like that gene is even more jacked up. At least for some people, the gene makes them enjoy it.
Yeah, at least they're enjoying their isms.
For us, it's like, no, it's like this torture. Is shite. This is terrible.
Yeah. And so I think, I mean, there's definitely predisposition. There's genetic links we can find. I mean, there's a gene that is, when it's expressed, I mean, there's a gene they can measure that shows that you will have a greater likelihood to be addicted to smoking or nicotine.
Yeah.
You have nicotine receptors in our head. Nicotine's freaking an awesome drug, but the way we get it kills us and has all the other toxic stuff with it. But there are people that have more of those receptors than others. Adam,
are there any people that just like wear the patch for the hell of it? Not because they're trying to quit, but because that's the healthy way to get nicotine?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's even it's still healthy, but I don't know much about that. But I do know that there are more nicotine receptors in certain people than there are in others. So again, it's sort of like a roulette thing. You don't know who your genetic line, but if you look back in your history and you got a bunch of drunk uncles at every wedding you've ever been to, there might be a thing. And so you just have to be careful. I think Dad was never real moralizing. He was never like, no, you do this, you're going to hell. It was always
like that.
I'm going to tell you this once, and it'll be very effective because it'll scare the crap out of you. And it did. It worked, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so the epigenetic thing is kind of new. We're all sort of, and you think, does epigenetics work the other way? Like some awesome superpower comes out. I'm genetically predisposed to see through walls, but it only comes out if I do 20 jumpy jacks. I mean, it's... I don't know if it works that way. And it's still pretty new science, but it sort of explains things. This is why I think we'll always have some moralizing on top of things, is our behaviors actually do increase the likelihood of gene expression. Not all of it.
Just in this way.
Not all of it.
In some positive ways, right, too. Like if you're have genes, perhaps, I mean, I don't know what the science is like this, but it seems like if you're predisposed to some athleticism that others aren't, those aren't going to express themselves without you tapping practicing into them somehow.
Absolutely.
Practicing, or
absolutely,
you played your first baseball game and realized, holy crap, I'm fast, or
right,
whatever.
Right. Adam always says, if I think I might have been really good at polo, but would have never known. You know, kind of like there's no epigenetic possibility because I was never asked to be on a polo team.
So he has no idea.
Or just something that you just couldn't be exposed to or whatever, yeah, right? Yeah, so it goes both ways. But I think what everyone has to be careful with is that the science isn't strong enough yet for it to be this simple, right? I am simplifying this. But I think it will. I think one day we'll have personalized medicine that will be amazing.
Yeah.
We'll just all be dead by then.
Yeah, it's like our kids will have opportunities to address their own genetic what's the word I'm looking for? Your genetic thing. There's a word I had in my head. It's a good word.
It starts with this?
Your predisposition.
Oh my gosh. That's
genetic predisposition. The drugs will address directly and say,
right,
you have a tendency towards stress, therefore these drugs are going to lower stress, heighten whatever, blah, blah, blah. They'll be more therapeutic, less side effects. Like I feel like 30 years from now, that stuff's awesome.
Yeah. You're going to have a chip in your arm. They're going to scan it and be like, give them ibuprofen because morphine.
And I'm potentially dead by then.
Oh, for sure.
Well.
Do you realize when we're like 70, 80, like half the population will be old? There better be some old people personal medicine. Yeah. Or they're just going to round us up and bury us.
It's going to be bad.
New episode.
New episode talking about overpopulation of old people. All right. Well, that'll do it. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode about addiction. I hope none of you are addicted. And I hope if you are, you get help. Damn it. We'll be back soon with a whole nother episode of this here show. Stay tuned for next week. Until then, bye. Say bye.
Bye.